About the time of the first Farm Aid concert in Champaign, 1985, a Carle Clinic psychologist, Barbara Bremer, went missing. Days after the concert wrapped up in Champaign, her body was found in a cornfield. Today, 33 years later, her death remains a mystery, one that haunts both investigators and her family. In Carol Varell's first Cold Case podcast, she looks back at the death of Miss Bremer and what authorities are still doing to try to solve it. We'll be back after this. Hey, Jim Rosso, News Gazette Media, reminding you that at newsgazette.com we have a ton of podcasts every week, from Brian Barnhart's Penny for Your Thoughts to Scott Beatty's News Hour to Elizabeth Hess, Dave Gentry talking with movers and shakers on their morning show. Head to newsgazette.com and search for podcasts.
On Sunday, September 22nd, 1985, thousands of music fans packed Memorial Stadium on the University of Illinois campus for the first ever Farm Aid concert. Not far away from the jubilance and applause, a family wrestled with despair, wondering what could have happened to a loved one. 3 days earlier, on Thursday, September 19th, 39-year-old Dr. Barbara Bremer, a psychologist at Carle Clinic, left home for a bicycle ride and was never seen alive again. She left home in the 2000 block of Blackthorne Drive in Southwest Champaign about 6:30 that evening. Champaign County Investigations Division Lieutenant Kurt Apperson and investigator J.R. Meeker begin her story.
Dr. Bremer, she was a psychologist for Carle. Her co-workers discovered on September 20th of 1985 that she essentially didn't show up for work. That's very unusual for her. They started calling to no avail. At some point in time, one of the co-workers went to her house, went inside, and discovered that she wasn't there, that her dress clothes that she had to go to work was still laying on the bed, and that her bike was missing. So everybody that knew her knew that she was an avid bike rider, okay? So at this point in time, the Champaign Police Department was involved in this investigation. So the missing person actually went to the Champaign Police Department. After learning that she was an avid bike rider, the Champaign Police Department, days later, got us involved. Because it wasn't uncommon, according to witnesses, that she'd go on 6 to 12 mile long bike rides. So with that being said, it's a possibility that she would be within our jurisdiction, out in the county somewhere. The Champaign Police, the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, was searching areas. They searched ponds that were in the immediate area of her residence. They talked to neighbors. A neighbor saw her leaving on her bike approximately 6:30 p.m. on September 19th, 1985. The Champaign Police Department posted to the media that Dr. Bremer was missing, and basically they got no responses. I mean, and if they did, they tracked down the responses they got from the media.
Yeah, Dr. Bremer was from Indiana, so that's where her sister still lives with her husband. So after the original report of her being missing to the Champaign Police Department, that same, within 30 minutes, her sister calls the Champaign Police Department and says, look, my sister's missing, I understand this. There's no way that she would have went out to harm herself. This is very unusual for her. There's nothing should be considered that she's going to do something to herself. This is really suspicious.
Yeah, I mean, she was a very well-respected psychologist within the community. She was, I wouldn't say a creature of habit, but she's not the type of person not to show up for work. And obviously there's flags there. And obviously her coworkers were concerned, and that's kind of when it all got started. The coworkers then reached out to family. The family hasn't heard from her. They concluded that something, was wrong.
So with the searches, too, the Champaign Police Department also, they were up in airplanes flying around looking to see, because they were looking for this bike. And because of her mileage that she could have ridden any day, that's why they wanted to try to get a broad area.
So it's a big area to search. The corn was up, at that time. It's September.
Man, that's right.
It's hard to see from the ground level, so they went up in the air. It appears that Dr. Bremer came from a very supportive family. I think at the time, reading that the family and friends or whoever offered a $50,000 reward to that lead the arrest of the people or persons responsible for this.
Because of it being farm season and the crops were getting ready to come down, they looked at area farm ground and laborers that worked with the farmers and followed with that. Then they also talked to her coworkers to get some information about some of her clients. So they did look at some of her patients that she would have. And they also spoke to, she had a couple male friends. One of them was a recent ex-boyfriend, but he was also a doctor. And so they took that and they ran with whatever leads they could at the time that they had given to them. If you look at the reports, they did everything that we would have done to this day.
Then in the evening, 5 days after Barbara Bremer was last seen, a shiny object caught the attention of a driver. He stopped at the edge of a cornfield off a rural road just southwest of Champaign, near Curtis and South Rising Road.
So on September 24th, 1985, at 6:06 p.m., a person living in the area, so a resident in the area of 700 East, 1300 North, was driving home and sees what appears to be a bike in the standing corn a couple rows into the cornfield. So that person stops, gets out to look at it. It isn't clear in the reports, but I'm sure this was obviously big news in the air. I'm sure he'd seen on the news that they were looking for her. Sees the bike, goes to look at it, and sees a body laying there. It was about, you know, 5 to 10 rows out in the standing corn.
So they found that she was wearing shorts. They found that her shorts were off and that her underwear was a little bit past her knees, okay? You know, her shoes, were they missing? I don't remember.
Yes.
So, I mean, and that's not uncommon with impacts. It appeared to them at that point in time, and I can't disagree, that she was drugged. And after you're being struck and, you know, your clothes get ripped, they loosen up, maybe the buttons break or they get torn, and they... As the suspects were pulling her through 7 to 10 rows in the cornfield, you know, they were pulling her by maybe her shoulders, her arms, or dragging her, caused her shorts and underwear to go down.
Did this bike belong to Barbara Bremer? And was it the missing psychologist who was found dead in the cornfield? Identification and an autopsy would come next. Investigator Meeker.
Obviously, you have a missing person. She was supposed to be on a bike. But they also, which we still have today, we still have her owner's manual for a bike. So we had a specific bike brand, and we had the owner's manual. They knew the bike brand, and it's a unique bike. It's a European bike. So that kind of, obviously you can't say this is her until the coroner actually rules that it's her, but because of the uniqueness of the bike, they could then determine that it was, in fact, her.
When you look at the scene and stuff like that, I think one of the first things any investigator would think of is the possibility of a sexual assault, mm-hmm. with the pants being down. They would obviously, you know, start looking into clients and start looking into people that she associates with. As well as her being drugged. I mean, we have seen when people are being drugged through, you know, not a flat area, a ground that's not flat, that it does pull clothes off. So, I mean, during the autopsy, there was no semen identified, investigation on her. There was no signs of her being sexually assaulted.
And the autopsy would reveal more. Extensive injuries and the possibility that someone attempted to hide what happened. Lieutenant Apperson.
They conduct an autopsy, and there was injuries that to her body, and one was to the jaw area, another injury was to the chest area, and the doctor back then concluded that those injuries were with so much force that a human could not generate that much force. Therefore, they kind of concluded that it must have been a farm implement. It could have been a combine or something like that, or a vehicle, or something that would cause that much force to do that much damage. I think they believe that, reviewing reports and talking to some investigators that worked it, is that basically it's kind of consistent with the front end of a combine and the edge of it hitting her in the jaw, and then that person applying the brakes, and which then downforces, creates that downforce in the front of the combine, then striking her in the chest area, crushing her chest areas and breaking her bones, her ribs specifically. So I think that's what they kind of concluded at that time. You know, it crushed her aorta, which to do that, a human doing that would take, they would have to generate a lot of force. And, you know, I agree with them. I mean, it's most likely probably an impact from some type of vehicle or farm implement.
You know, with that, the coroner states that He's not saying this wasn't a homicide, but he's just suggesting it could be an accidental incident that happened.
You know, at one point they thought about recreating the scene using a person the same size, same height, same description that they had of Dr. Brimmer, and lining it up with a tractor and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So investigations and investigators back then started specifically targeting farmers and equipment in that area, and they started looking and talking to people. Where were you at? Where did you go down this road? And keep in mind, you know, on September 19th, and it appears from the scene that the vehicle or the farm equipment, the Strucker, was traveling westbound. I mean, you're looking right into the sun at that point in time. Maybe they didn't see her, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but it's a strong likelihood that maybe they were driving in the sun and simply didn't see her. And then once they struck her, it was like, oh, we need to cover this up, and pulled her into the cornfield.
Hours, days, and months of hard work led to dead ends. Investigator Meeker.
I know that they talked to a lot of people, and I think that some people of interest got narrowed down to about five. And those five people were all farm laborers in the area. Some of them maybe not live in the area, some transient. The investigators went down to Tennessee to talk to some of them back then, because they had obviously, after the farming season, left and went back home. It was pretty common back then, mm-hmm. Especially for big farms. And when they narrowed that down, it was just that there was nothing that they could actually pinpoint and say, you know, this person did it. They didn't have anybody admit to it. Several of them obviously admitted that they were driving different type of implement vehicles in the area at the time.
Over the years, new information and tips would trickle into investigators.
Just like any case that's unsolved, or even some solved cases, depending on what kind of case it is, when we get leads, we follow up on them. We no matter what it we appear it's going to take us, even somebody mentions her name, you know, we obviously then go out and talk to them. We go try to find out what's going on in that. Some of them, a lot of them with cases like this, just appear to be rumors. A couple years ago, a person called into the sheriff's office that was intoxicated and said that he had information about it. Well, it was an older gentleman, and they go out and talk to him, who, when they get out and talk to him, he's intoxicated. Investigators went out and followed up with it with him, and it just, when he's sober, then he just said he was running his mouth. He didn't really know what he was saying. So that's some of the unfortunate things we deal with when dealing with cold cases like this that we have to follow up on, because you never know when that one little bit of information can break everything out.
Now, 33 years later, the death of Barbara Brimmer remains puzzling and continues to haunt her family and investigators. What happened to her that night in September 1985? Investigators still want to know and solve the case.
And with doing this podcast, I mean, I would hope that we would probably get tips in. And we will follow up on those tips, and we will investigate it to the fullest extent. Some of them may not conclude the way we want, but there's definitely a chance that one of them might. And I'm not very good at math, but what did this happen 33, 35 years mm-hmm. ago? So, I mean, you know, the chances are this person that did this, or these people that were involved in this potentially, are getting older, you know? And now's a good time to talk about it, and before you go and meet your maker. And we'll definitely sit down with anyone that has information. We'll definitely track it down, whether they submit their information by Crime Stoppers or they call the sheriff's office and they talk to us, or we'll definitely track down any information that we have. This impacts people in many ways, and family members, it definitely impacts them. And Investigator Meeker talked to some family members prior to doing this interview, because obviously we want to give them a courtesy call saying, hey, this is going to be on a podcast thing, and I can't speak for them, but I mean, obviously it impacted them, and you know, their loved one was taken away from them. So anytime you have a case like this, I mean, it's very, we need the community's help. And there's people out there that have answers. And, you know, like I said, people are probably involved in this or getting up there in age. And this is a great time to come clean with everything. And we'll sit down, we'll talk to them, we'll investigate it to its fullest. And whether it's rumors or whether it's the person walking in saying, I did it, we're going to look at every avenue that's presented to us.
So yeah, in talking to family members of hers, they actually still have the vehicle that she owned. They never got rid of it. They said it's sitting in our driveway. Barbara Brimmer's brother's still alive, lives out of state somewhere, and he comes in and he drives it when he's there. So it's still an operating vehicle that they have, that they've kept because of, you know, the connection to her, which surprised me that they had a vehicle that's...
Yeah, 33 years old.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, you know, so that tells you what that family goes through, and every time they walk out to the garage or the driveway, they think of their family member. And, man, we would like to have some closure. And that's all we're asking for. Everything else we can work out. It would be nice just to have someone to come forward, whether this is an accident or intentional, to provide the family with some closure. And, you know, I can't stress that enough. I mean, think if it was your loved one. Think if it was your daughter. Think if it was your brother or your sister or whatever they are to you. That's the biggest thing that doing this job for 23 years, both of us have done it for about that time, is it hurts when we can't provide a family with closure. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do here. And that's why we're trying to generate publicity so we can provide the family with closure.
And it just leaves a huge hole in your heart.
Your heart, yeah.
Yeah, people don't understand some of the times that when we have a case that we're working, you get involved in that case. You like to see an end result as well as the family. You may not be as emotionally invested in it, but you are invested in it, and you've done a lot of work on the case. So we like to see closure as well on stuff like that.
Was her death an accident? Was she hit by large farm equipment? Or was it something else that caused her death? It's still an active and open investigation.
I think it's still being treated as a reckless homicide or homicide. I would look at it almost as a homicide right now, because we just don't know the circumstances. Obviously, if it was an accident or if someone was intoxicated and hit her, you know, that would be a reckless homicide. But if someone intentionally ran her over, we just don't have those answers. So I personally, right now, I would more describe it as a homicide investigation. And then we start at the top, and then if we get information in, we can lower it down.
For example, if somebody hears this, sees some new stuff on it, and then comes forward and says, yes, it was me, I was on an implement, and I accidentally hit her, then that's what we're talking about. Just because somebody comes in and says that doesn't mean they're going to be charged with homicide.
Right.
We still have to work with things to discover, you know, what it actually was.
As far as, like, new developments, I mean, there's always information coming in. And not always, but sometimes there's information coming in. And when you review cases, there's things that happen within your community that draws your attention as an investigator. And there's consistency through cases that may have happened here or out of our jurisdiction that I think if we would have known about at that time, we would have looked into it. Obviously, now that we know about some situation that happened recently, I think it's in our best interest to look into it. And I'm not saying that that's going to solve anything, but it's something that, you know, as an investigator, you look at it. It would definitely keep me awake at night if we didn't eliminate it.
Correct. So, I mean, obviously it wouldn't do justice if we didn't continue on looking into things that we feel are necessary to do.
Right.
And now, as people who may have been involved age, another call to come forward to say something or admit something, or anyone who knows something that could help Barbara Brimmer's aching family understand what happened, to bring some closure to that part of her death and help investigators close the case. Anyone. Investigator Meeker and Lieutenant Apperson urge you to reach out. Even what might seem like the smallest bit of information could be the key to solving the cold case of Barbara Brimmer.
A lot of people don't understand that little sighting that somebody may have seen can break a case wide open. So with any case, it's very important, even though somebody may think, well, what I have to say isn't going to be helpful. It could be that little thing that connects the dots to where we need to go.
Yeah, I would just add that call us. And you know, it's our job to sit there and say, okay, this is good, this is bad, and work through it. And the worst thing they could do is not call. I mean, that is the absolute worst thing. Yeah, it may be something that they looked at in 1985, but at least they're calling us now. We can confirm that it was, you know, they conclude that that lead concluded with negative results. And, you know, they may say something that they forgot to say an investigator or back then, or they may say something that wasn't documented. I mean, it's imperative that it appears that the community was involved. We're asking back then, we're asking them to be involved again. And, man, if you have any information, call us. And the worst thing you could do is hold back that information. It could be you heard fifth hand, you know, I mean, the thing in some of these cases that we've seen in the past is, you know, someone's at a bar and they're talking and maybe you didn't hear it directly, but you heard it fourth hand. You know, those are the kind of things that break cases wide open. And if you don't say anything, we don't know about it. And, you know, knowledge is power. And that's what the knowledge of, you know, the community gives us the power to go out and do our jobs.